Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on X at jwright929 ESPN. Maybe one day I'll get my account back. Maybe, maybe, maybe. As always, you can listen on the radio dial, 92.9 FM, 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio dial and you want to keep up with everything happening here at the station, you can stream on the Odyssey app, free to download, free to listen. You can also stream us on the iHeartRadio app as well as TuneIn Radio app. All you have to do is just search for 92.9 FM ESPN. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. You can follow him on the Everything app at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good afternoon, Jeffrey.
My company is yours each and every. By the way, that is the sound of a man that is a Jets fan, and he's watching his entire team getting gutted. My company is yours each and every Tuesday on the program. He is the host of VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast, as well as VSiN's College Football Betting Tailgate Show, Saturdays, 8 a.m. Central Time. You can also see him on VSiN Prime Time. That airs on weeknights. Download the VSiN Watch app. On the Everything app, at one Tim Murray. Tim, good day, sir.
I forgot that King George was a Jets fan.
Yeah.
Because I was going to open by saying, hug a Jets fan. Well, you could hug your producer there. I also just started drinking a strawberry
We should just clip it. Just clip it, George. I just started drinking. That can be Tim's new drop.
I'm not a Jets fan. I did, however, bet Cal over the weekend.
Well, we also had maybe the worst NFL line of the week.
Oh yeah,
I mean of the year.
I was a good friend to you on.
You were. That's the thing. I should have just said I'm going down with the ship. I think Seattle is way better. I think the NFC West has proven it's better than the NFC East, and I should have just trusted my brain. But every ounce of gambling brain said the right play was the Commanders. You were far from the only person that said they had the ticket as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look,
it's Sunday night dogs and unders are usually pretty easy to go with.
The dogs have been barking on Sunday. It was kind of a get-back day for the previous week, which was just chalk amongst chalk, 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 but no, as soon as I saw that game, that first drive, I was like, ooh.
Yeah, we both.
This is not good.
We both texted each other like, this is just a loser.
This is on, light this ticket on fire. It is over. But yeah, I did start drinking a strawberry basil mint sparkling water. That's a lot going on in this can right now.
That definitely sounds like something that the co-eds at college drink.
Oh, I'm sure. I love sparkling waters. I have tons of them.
Yeah.
I don't like the limoncello, though, and there's too many of them. I'm not a lime guy either. So my garage just has like 36 cans of like lemon and lime sparkling waters. I just drink the grapefruit ones.
Yeah, my wife is big on that. I don't know. I always just feel like when I drink one of those, I'm like, where's the syrup?
I know. That's why I drink them, because
probably keeps you from, hammering 8,000 soft drinks a day. All right, let's see what we got coming up on the program. So, for the audience out there, we're going to talk about Ja, but it's going to be in the second hour. I've had a lot of Ja talk, whatnot. I'll go through what I usually do with Tim, which is give Tim the broad strokes, and then he gets to just essentially be our therapist. Like, the unbiased, like, he's just listening to what we're saying, and then he offers an opinion. So we'll get into that during hour number two. But we'll focus on, we've got officially the rankings come out tonight. Get into a few questions from there. I've also done a little bit of math that I wanted to share with you. We'll get into our awards during the next segment. Then we'll get in hour number two. We'll get into John Morant. We've got the NFL trade deadline, which appears to be quite active. I feel like the NFL has started to make the trade deadline a thing the last couple of years, where they're actually like making decent moves that feel like maybe they'll be significant, although maybe this is just me falling for the trap and that we used to just ignore the trade deadline because everyone's like, well, yeah, people move, but it doesn't really actually change these teams. So we'll talk about that. Get more of the drama unfolding between ESPN and YouTube. We also had college basketball start last night. Then we'll take a look at some of the lines that we're looking at this week, and then we'll tell your story, and we'll get out of here. So I wanted to start here with you, Tim, because obviously tonight begins the, shall we say, the annoying narrative politicking or grandstanding from conferences. Are you with me?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Especially the one in your neighborhood.
Yes. No, there's no question who is the number one culprit, and I do not deny that. But I was starting to think about this over the weekend, and this is kind of half-baked, and I'd mentioned it to George, so I want to run it by you. I do wonder, okay, let's go to week one, and let's keep it with its week one weirdness. And let's also use the pretext that I believe that had Ohio State gotten into that game and thought they needed more than 14 points, I think they would have done it. But to date, the only game of record that has been one score for Ohio State, even at home, has been the Texas game. I also wonder if the SEC struggles with this. They don't really get the chance to flex on one another. And like I was thinking about this in the sense of, okay, if you go and look at over at SP Plus, the average SEC SP Plus ranking is 34. Just like the Big Ten, they have 9 teams inside of the top 25. But the Big Ten only has one additional team inside of SP Plus top 50. Whereas the SEC has 9 top 25 teams, but 14 teams inside of the top 50. The highest SP Plus team is 5, and the lowest is 63. Conversely, with the Big Ten, you have, obviously, I think they have 1, 2, and 3. Let me double check. I believe they have 1, 2, and 3 right now. In the Big Ten, yes, they have 1, 2, and 3. Ohio State, Indiana, and Oregon are all 1, 2, and 3 in SP Plus. So I just find myself wondering, like, the fact that you don't get to play the Purdues of the world, because even if you, like, take a team like Arkansas, which you and I continue to lose money on, they have an offense that...
72 post-game win percentage.
Correct. But would you agree with me? They have an offense capable enough that if you don't show up to play and score some points, that they are capable of beating you.
I think so. I don't know. I'm at the point where they make my head hurt. And can I, not to go into the weeds here on Arkansas, and maybe it's a stupid comparison, but Arkansas this year has had a close game with Tennessee.
Yep.
Has had a close game with...
they had a close final score with A&M, yeah.
Close final score. And they lost by 43 to Notre Dame.
Like, yes.
What does that do to the perception, or am I like thinking too much into this?
I think you are thinking too much. I would say this. I'm not tossing it out because
it's like, well, then, like, there's so many avenues we can go down, right, with this. But I think your overall point of the worst team in the SEC is better than the bottom.
Yeah,
Big Ten game? I think that is a fair assessment.
Well, what I'm really saying is this. My eyes tell me Ohio State's a different team. And my eyes tell me that Indiana's a different team. But if Georgia were playing Maryland, or if A&M were playing Maryland, or Purdue, or Michigan State, or any of the other teams that are starting to get routed at the bottom of their league, would we feel the same way about those teams?
I mean, I think that's kind
Rutgers,
of the argument.
Right? You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's kind of the argument. Now, I will say, I don't really feel like this year Are we going to have a discussion? I mean, I guess we could. USC's only got two losses. They could enter the conversation at some point.
But I feel like for USC
Washington
to
could enter the conversation. Well, here's the thing. Washington and USC, for them to really enter the convo,
Oregon probably has to exit.
They have to beat Oregon. I really don't see a logical pathway at this point. Look, you could make a crazy example of everything. Well, what if this team beat this team and that? Like, yeah, I get it. But if we're using our logical sports brains, I don't really see a path to four Big Ten teams this year.
Okay.
Because last year you had Indiana, and
there's one path, I think.
Okay.
All right, let's say Indiana wins out,
yep.
Which I don't think either of us, I think both of us would be surprised.
It would be stunning if they didn't win out. They're a 15-point favorite against Penn State this weekend, and that's their hardest game left.
Oregon wins out.
I would be a little surprised by that, but okay, that's the third.
I think they'll at least be favored in the remaining
they
games.
They will be. Yeah, they have Iowa.
But I'm with you. The idea that they're infallible, I think, is probably incorrect.
Okay, yep. Ohio State wins out.
Nope.
Oh, you lose to Michigan?
Yep.
I mean, I guess I can't say that's impossible because they lost to him last year when I thought that really was impossible. I think this Michigan team is worse than they were last year.
I was going to say, I don't know if Michigan is good enough defensively to do that again.
Like, Michigan last year was elite defensively. But I will say that's not crazy, right? They're at home. They beat them four straight years.
And maybe there is just truly a heebie-jeebies.
Okay, so that's a fair and logical, unlikely, but not like spaceships are landing on, you know, the field and abducting players, like, scenario. So that's logical. I don't think it'll happen, but it's logical. But Michigan would have to win a game as a double-digit underdog, which they did last year. They were a 20-point underdog, and they won that game. I do think Michigan's defense was elite last year. And then they also went to their bowl game and won that game as well, which is still pretty shocking. But I think USC and Washington and Oregon, they're all going to figure it out, right? Because Oregon has one loss. Now, what happens if USC beats Oregon? Could we talk about four teams getting in? I don't think so. I think the loser of that game gets eliminated. Not impossible that four could get in, but I think it's unlikely.
Okay. I don't necessarily believe in this, but if Iowa beats Oregon this week,
okay.
Now that means they'd have to go to USC and win, and then they'll be favored against Michigan State at home, and they'll be favored at whatever this version of Nebraska is.
Another year of Nebraska under. Good thing I bet over 7.5 wins.
And they have, at that point, like, let's say they would be 10-2 with a loss to Indiana by 5. Or 7, however you want to. It was a one-score game.
Mm-hmm.
And then they lost on a, whatever, 55-yarder at Iowa State.
I think Iowa would have an argument.
I think that
because they would have two really good wins.
I think that could be another path.
But I think Iowa would get in over Oregon, and then Oregon would be fighting. Oregon, here's the thing about Oregon right now. And I'm curious where they're going to end up being placed today. What's their win? They don't have one. Here's their resume. Montana State, FCS. Oklahoma State, worst Power 4 team. Northwestern, maybe bowl eligible. Oregon State, whatever that is. Penn State.
God, did you watch that?
I had it on one of the quad boxes. Because I had to get creative with my quad box. Penn State on the road. That doesn't look all that great anymore. They might not get to a bowl game. Lost at home to Indiana, Rutgers, Wisconsin. Like, I think Oregon, now, Oregon's substance is coming. At Iowa this weekend, home to USC, at Washington.
You left out a Minnesota game.
There's a reason I did that.
Yeah.
If Oregon runs the table, they're in, no doubt. If they lose one game, it kind of gets interesting with me with Oregon because the team that they would lose to then would have the leg up on them, and all the teams that they play, Iowa, USC, and Washington, all are kind of hanging out in that two-loss world. So I think the Big Ten's going to kind of cannibalize itself for that third spot, and it will become pretty clear at the end of the runway, which leads me to this. I think the SEC right now, sitting where they're at, has got a pretty darn good shot at five teams.
Yeah, I think, like, let's go through, what do you think the big questions are tonight? I think the first
Who's
one...
number one? I think Indiana's going to be number one.
So that's interesting because I've seen some projections where they think that they're going to put Ohio State at one and then they'll put Bama at two.
Bama.
Indiana at three. Now, I'm with you.
A&M with a road win at Notre Dame is going to get left out of the top three? They're undefeated.
I think it's because of never underestimate that committee's ability to see that A and think something.
Well, they're going to do something weird. And last year we forget what it was, but we're like, something weird is going to happen. So right now the AP poll is Ohio State 1, Indiana 2, A&M 3, Bama 4. They always seem to make a statement like, we don't even look at the AP poll. Yeah, okay, sure, buddy. They'll do something weird. A&M being 4th with a road win at Notre Dame would be odd.
So the argument would be...
Who has the best win of the four teams? If you include Alabama in this discussion, because they have a win over Georgia on the road, I guess that's the best win, right?
I think that's... So like, let's go through. So the options would be A&M's win at Notre Dame.
Yep. Indiana at Oregon.
At Oregon. I think
Ohio State home to Texas.
So we can debate what we actually think is the best win, but I think the committee is going to view the win at Georgia as the best win.
And I agree with that.
Because they haven't lost in 5 years or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that is the best win, but you also lost to an unranked team by two touchdowns. Like, that has to count for something.
I want to be clear. I'm not.
No, I know. No, I'm not saying, I'm not arguing with you. I'm curious what the committee will do. I mean, could A&M be one?
I would find it hard to believe that.
Win at LSU, I guess that doesn't look as good as it did at the time. But they're going to say, well, that's a road win against an above 500 SEC team. They beat Notre Dame, who may be top 10 on the road. Like, do they use strength of record?
They will never admit it, but strength of record usually is what, historically, the strength of record is what, like, most resembles the rankings.
So A&M has number one strength of record, Indiana's number two. BYU is four. Oh my God, I'm not ready for that.
Well, that was actually one of the questions that I had, which is how many one-loss teams are in front of BYU?
Well, according to ESPN's strength of record, zero.
Now, if I recall last year when we were doing this, they actually went away from it a little bit. But I think this is another interesting aspect for it for me. Okay, Cincinnati kind of dismissed themselves this weekend. But let's say BYU goes to Lubbock this week and loses a close one.
Okay.
They both went out the rest of the way. They meet in Arlington, and BYU wins. How do they treat that?
Yeah. Well, obviously, BYU would be in auto bid.
Correct.
Yeah, Texas Tech would be an interesting case study because they would have a road win at Utah. Where would Utah be at that time? They would have a home win over BYU, and the rest of it would be pretty mediocre because the Big 12 is falling apart right now.
And they have a
loss to Arizona State, fair or not. That's going to age poorly, even though I just don't fully anticipate Jeff Sims running for 228 yards on a weekly basis.
God, that was – Kenny Dillingham is a good coach, man. Like, I was on Iowa State there, and I had a good number, too. And I'm just sitting there just going like, you know what? Take Iowa State away. Just take them away. But I think then we now flip over to, all right, the ACC, because this is a question that I know that you have 100% pondered.
this conference.
If
this conference does not deserve more than one team.
Okay, but here's the question that I have.
I know, if Georgia Tech beats Georgia.
No. If Miami finishes at 10-2 and Notre Dame finishes at 10-2, how are they going to treat that?
I think Notre Dame gets in over them.
Okay, I think I'm actually fine with that, but I do understand the people that would say, like, did head-to-head not matter?
I agree. And I would, if I were a Miami fan, I would be furious if that situation unfolded. If you're Miami, I mean, it's weird to say this, but, like, what's worse, losing at Miami or losing at SMU? I think that's the way it kind of plays itself out, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think I did see the...
And if Notre Dame's won 10 straight games, like, I totally... I was really conflicted over the weekend because it was hilarious that Cristobal did it again and just can't help himself losing as a double-digit favorite.
I think, you know what I decided this week, and maybe I'll get burned next year. I'm going to treat Miami next year the same way that I treated A&M this year. If I'm wrong next year, so be it. And A&M's proven me wrong right now. But, like, I think I'm just done. I'm done.
You have to be. Like, we said it. I said it on this show. I said it on my show on VSiN. I said there was a point in time, and I was like, man, I might bite my words, but I think the most trustworthy team in college football is Miami. What an idiot am I. They lost at home to Louisville. Typical spot to lose to Louisville and Jeff Brohm. And then off a bye week, they went to SMU, who I think stinks. They didn't have a bye week. They played Stanford the week.
Yeah, they remember they had the weird bye week, Florida State bye week, and now they're going to. Yeah.
And then they lost to SMU. The Miami Notre Dame.
Fresh off a loss to Wake Forest.
The Notre Dame-Miami thing is going to be pretty interesting if it is 10-2 versus 10-2 down the stretch.
And I think how they're going to get away with it, because I tend to agree with you, I think what they're going to do is Miami's going to be so far back that Miami's not going to have a chance to get up and catch them. And it's just not going to be a discussion.
What's going to help, in my opinion, Notre Dame, because Notre Dame has to go 10-2, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So Notre Dame gets the first crack at Pitt. Miami gets the last crack at Pitt. So you could say, like, hey, Notre Dame beat Pitt, and then 2 weeks later, Miami beat a wounded Pitt after they lost to Notre Dame, Georgia Tech, and then Miami all in a row. Like, as weird as it sounds, if Notre Dame beats Pitt in 2 weeks, that win's going to look better and keep them up there. And then, like, by the end, it's like, while the loss win will probably get worse, they'll already be up there, like you mentioned, so that might already help them, as weird as that sounds.
You know what the other thing I was thinking about on Saturday? Texas ain't done.
No, they are far from done.
And
guess what? You started the show by talking about it. Texas has a win over Oklahoma, which is aging very well, after that win against Tennessee. They got the win over Vandy. If they split Georgia and Texas A&M, you better talk to your grandkids about a 9-3 Texas being in the playoff.
And I honestly don't know how they'll treat it. Obviously, to your point, a lot of this depends on, well, where is everybody else? Because we saw last weekend, all right, if you really think the ACC is going to break cleanly, that's on you. If you think the Big 12 is going to break cleanly, I think the only way the Big 12 breaks cleanly is if just BYU and Texas Tech just continue to separate themselves.
Yeah, I think the scenario about the Big 12, if Texas Tech manhandles BYU and then gets beat in the Big 12 championship, I almost think that's better, because then the Big 12 auto bid goes to the team that beats Texas Tech and they're 11-2. They've got wins against Utah in dominant fashion, BYU in dominant fashion. I think that's the best case scenario for the Big 12, is Texas Tech to dominate and then get upset in the championship by whoever.
I mean, I actually think the best case would be for Texas Tech to lose a nail biter this weekend, and then BYU loses to Texas Tech in the championship game. The problem
BYU would be undefeated.
Right. The problem that you would run into though is, does two loss Texas Tech get in? Because that would be, you know, then
yeah, they would get in because they just beat BYU in the auto bid. They got the auto.
No, but I'm saying when they get into the title game.
Oh.
Because that would be a second conference loss.
Well, I could do those scenarios. I got a website. I was spending way too much time on the ACC today.
Because to me,
I also think BYU is going to lose at Cincinnati. That seems like a classic spot for BYU to lose.
Because right now, well, then that would really be a jumbled mess. Because then
BYU ain't winning this weekend, man. I am pretty confident. I think they are frauds. They've been living on the edge. Give them credit for the win at Utah. They were minus or plus two in the turnover margin. Multiple fourth down conversions failed by Utah. Like, I don't believe in this BYU team. And I think Texas Tech is pretty legit. I just think they have too many athletes.
Yes, I think the only problem, though, I see Texas Tech at the last month has not been a serious football team.
I think this is the Utah-Cincinnati game all over, where you saw the number keep creeping up. I saw betting splits that had Cincinnati at like 80% of tickets. Neighbor Nick is telling you that number's too high, and then Utah wins by 31. And Brendan Sorsby goes 11 of 33.
Oh, listen, I mean, I fell for the trap.
I won't be the first time, won't be the last time. Like, if BYU went down there, I'll tip my cap. Could it be a nail biter? Maybe. I don't think they're a super talented team. I think they're well coached. I don't think they beat themselves, and that wins you football games. It won them the Utah game.
I have my questions, though, of...
I mean, they should have lost to Colorado.
No, I mean, I'm with you. I do think that they have slowly brought their quarterback along.
Yeah, I think Bachmeyer's... I mean, he's a good prospect. He was a four-star. I mean, yeah, he's a good player. I mean, they should have lost to Arizona.
No, I mean, I'm with you. It's between them and Virginia. It's like, I don't know. Virginia to me is just, I've accepted that they're just going to be 2022 TCU.
I'm betting against them every week. I don't care. I got Wake this week. This team's going down. They are so fake. I mean, the spot against Virginia, or excuse me, against Florida State was a great spot. I had them in that spot. They had no business beating Louisville. Like, you look in that box score, you look at the post-game win expectancy, it's insane that they won that football game. The Washington State game was just kind of a weird one. Yeah. I mean, look, the ACC, and we can get into it, like, and we'll get into it with our awards here in a little bit. Like, Duke beating Clemson, like, how in the world did that happen? Like, that is one of the worst calls I've ever seen in my life on a fourth down to call pass interference there. One of the worst calls I've ever seen, ever.
No, I mean, I think the only other argument would be is why was Clemson's defense just getting shredded?
Well, yeah, I mean.
Okay, so let's do it this way. All right, we'll start with the Big Ten.
Mm-hmm.
We're penciling... We're sharpieing Ohio State and Indiana.
Correct.
We are close. We're leaving at least a third spot, right?
I think the third spot, to me, the third spot is Oregon as the favorite, USC, Washington kind of all in there. Because they all play each other. It will figure itself out. I think the third spot will get clear as the month goes on. I am confident they will have three teams. I don't think they'll have four.
All right, so let's go to the SEC. We've got A&M. We've got Alabama. We've got Georgia. We've got Ole Miss.
Mm-hmm.
Do we need to have another team right now? So the possibilities would be
Oklahoma.
What? OU, Texas, Vandy.
I think it's OU, Texas, Vandy, even further back. I think there's, well, here's the question. Who's ranked higher tonight, OU or Texas?
Who doggies? I bet they go, since they have the same record, I bet they go Texas.
They probably should, right?
Texas won head-to-head. They have the same record, and they have a better conference record.
Yeah.
I think that's what they'll do. All right.
So, Texas and Oklahoma, it will play itself out. Oklahoma still has to play Bama. Missouri with a third-string quarterback and LSU. But Oklahoma's got two losses. The question's going to be that fifth spot in the SEC is probably going to be a three-loss team. And you're going to have to put them up against a two-loss Big Ten or whatever comes out of the Big 12.
And last year, everyone focused on Indiana, but the reality was, if you followed the committee along the entire year when they were handing out the rankings, they were basically saying one-loss Indiana was equivalent to two-loss SEC, but it was the third when they had the two-loss difference. Now, also, Indiana's strength of schedule is not as bad as it was last year.
No.
It's not great, Indiana's, but it's better.
I mean, they beat Oregon on the road this year. Like, this year... And they're undefeated. Last year, they lost to Ohio State. They didn't have anything comparable. Like, their best win was, like, beating the crap out of Nebraska. This year, they've got a road win at Oregon, who's a top 10 team probably tonight, right? They only have one loss. Yeah, they're top 8 or so. So, yeah, I think they're penciled in for sure, or sharpied in. Yeah, I think what compares to the two-loss SEC this year? Is it, you know, where's Virginia, right? Virginia, their best win is Louisville. They lost to NC State. And that's pretty much it, right? That Louisville win's nice. It's on the road. It's a good win. Where's one-loss Virginia going to be? Who's going to be higher, one-loss Virginia or two-loss Notre Dame? Who they do have a common opponent. Notre Dame beat NC State by 29, and Virginia lost to them.
So the most projections that I see have Notre Dame ahead.
But should you argue that Virginia should be ahead because they've got arguably a better win at Louisville? Is that better than home to USC? Based off of the rankings, it might be. Now, the strength of record is better for Notre Dame than Virginia. But, yeah, it's – I don't know. I'm curious to see what it unfolds tonight. I know everyone kind of rolls their eyes at this show. And as the season goes I do.
The first one I think is important. Because the first one lays out their, like, their blueprint and kind of how – because each committee kind of thinks a little differently. And so the first one kind of lays out here's what they value.
What's the curveball tonight? Because there's always a curveball.
I think the curveball tonight... All right, let me think what the possibilities would be.
I could see... So I'm pulling up last year's rankings.
I want to say this, but I don't think they're going to do it. But I could see the curveball being they started Miami ahead of Notre Dame, but I don't think they're going to do that.
I think Virginia being ahead of Notre Dame would be interesting. Like a one-loss ACC ahead of Notre Dame. I wonder how they're going to view Notre Dame. I really do. Because the AP poll, right, didn't drop them out after their first two losses, and they've slowly been climbing up. They've won 6 in a row. The losses up until last week aged well, A&M and Miami. But now that Miami loss doesn't look as good, Miami's got two losses. I think I'm very curious to see what they do with them because I'm sure plenty of people out there think Notre Dame is overrated because of their preseason prognostication and where they finished the season a year ago and what is their best win. USC, it's a good win. Is that a great win? They're a fringe top 25 team.
I think they're going to have Bama in front of A&M.
Ooh, I like that.
All right,
I think Indiana's won too. That'll be my guess.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get into our awards from the week that was. We'll talk about it next right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
ESPN.
All right, Tim, each and every week we do it. We hand out our weekly awards from the weekend that was in college football. Who was your team of the week?
I've debated. I think I'll hold off on this team for my Heisman. So I'll give NC State team of the week. At home, it's been a weird year for Dave Dorn's squad. They have a win over Virginia, and now they have a dominant win over Georgia Tech. They came in, that line was a little stinky poo, and NC State took care of business, making this conference as wacky as possible. That game had over 1,000 yards of offense, and I was impressed by C.J. Bailey in that game. 340 yards through the air, 2 touchdowns. Ran for 34 yards. Jaden Scott ran all over Georgia Tech. And, I'll give the Wolfpack with that stupid hand signal my team of the week.
Yeah, we were laughing at how, if you have to describe the ACC, how would you do it? And I think it would be, right now, the two teams that would play in the conference title game would be Georgia Tech and Virginia. Both have lost to NC State, but only one of them counted.
Right, yeah.
So I was in between SMU and Oklahoma.
Oklahoma's impressive, man.
I think I'm giving it to Oklahoma because you are listening to the fraud talk all week. You go into as hostile of an environment. I think it's probably the most underrated SEC environment. Neyland at night, I think, doesn't get its due. And, you know, it's one of those things where I don't really know whether Oklahoma won the game or Tennessee lost the game, but I do know Oklahoma's defensive line absolutely wreaked havoc. And to get off the mat like that and to go into a game where I think the consensus was, man, I don't really like Oklahoma. Now, you could have pointed out the line was stinky all week. I'm with you.
Nobody was picking Oklahoma. Like my podcast partner, Matt Humans, who I respect his handicapping a lot. He does a great job handicapping. He was on Tennessee. I'm like, man, seems fishy. Just seems off.
I will say down to down.
Tennessee. I stayed off of it. I will say.
Tennessee should have won. No, I lost. I had the worst week of the year. It was awful. Even when I had dogs, like it was just the absolute worst. So I'll give it to Oklahoma, you know, and I think where you could say maybe Oklahoma is turning a corner. They are now consistently at least getting enough out of the run game that's not just John Mateer that I do think that makes their defense or makes their offense a little bit more dangerous. Mateer was going to do it again, though. I thought he was going to throw another, like, what are you doing?
They get a bye. Alabama's game against LSU, obviously not as daunting as we thought preseason. But that's the season.
Are you going to fire on that?
I'm thinking about LSU.
That's what I'm saying. Are you going to? No, trust me. I knew which side you would be firing on. I didn't have to.
You know me too well.
Yeah.
I have not bet it yet, but it would be LSU or pass for me in that spot.
Heisman winner of the week.
I'm going to give it to Owen McCown, UTSA. He was tremendous.
17 for 17 on play action passes.
Yeah. Thursday night, I did a buddy of mine asked me to go on with Stan Verrett. On the FanDuel Sports Network.
Yep.
And he was like, I need 3 bets. I was like, for tonight? I was like, okay. So I gave him like 2 bets for the NFL game. And I'm like, UTSA at home? Who's going to want to bet UTSA at home? Look ahead spot for Tulane. And sometimes it's nice when things just play out. And Owen McCown was incredible. 31 of 33 in the game for Owen McCown. And the meep. Really threw a bit of a wrench into the American with that win over Tulane. Jake Retzlaff was terrible. He gets benched in that game. But Owen McCown, 31 of 33, 370 yards, 4 touchdowns for the old Roadrunners as home dogs on Thursday night.
Yeah, I what was the Thursday night game, NFL?
It was Ravens and Dolphins.
Oh, yeah. So I remember thinking, getting off the air, all right, I think I want UTSA and I want Coastal. And the only thing I bet that night was Miami +8.
Well, it's funny because early on in that game, Marshall was winning, and I made a joke on air. I was like, man, everybody told me to bet under Marshall's win total. Look, they're going to win again. And then Coastal just turned that thing completely around, and they won going away on the teal turf.
Heisman winner of the week. For me, I'm going Julian Sayin. I think another reason why
is he the
I'm
a real Heisman winner?
I kind of think so. Because like when we talked, like we laid out the scenario for Michigan, I am now thinking that Ohio State's going to exercise some demons in that game.
I thought they were last year, to be fair, but I kind of.
I mean, I took
you.
21 in that game, but it wasn't like I was like, Michigan's going to win.
It feels to me a little bit like Ohio State. I think you've mentioned this, and you even mentioned it earlier in the show. They kind of just been easing Julian Sayin
yep.
in. And it's like, and then we're going to get, it feels like we're going to get to the playoff again, and we're going to get last year's Ohio State. Be like, good God, where did this team come from? Like, they looked vulnerable last year, lost to Oregon, lost to Ohio State, or excuse me, lost to Michigan. And now they have the best wide receiver core in the country. They've got, I think, the best defense in the country, even though some smart people that I respect have talked about who have they played from an offensive standpoint. Fair argument. But Julian Sayin, he was awesome against Penn State, and fair to give him the Heisman of the week.
20 of 23, 316 yards, 4 touchdowns, obviously no interceptions. I mean, I don't know. It's just every time I watch him, I leave more impressed. And I get it. He's throwing to the best receivers and whatnot, but it's like every throw is on time. Every throw is on the money. I find myself more and more impressed with him. All right, my most college football moment of the week, it was the tight end for Tennessee that couldn't block R. Mason Thomas, and then he couldn't tackle him on the same play.
Yeah.
So, like, R. Mason Thomas blows the play up because he can't block him, and then the tight end's just trying to go down the whole field trying to tackle him, and he just couldn't do it. That was, like, the classic, these two things are not the same.
So someone pointed this out to me. It's not necessarily of the weekend, but if you stayed up late and you watched San Jose State throw for like a billion yards against Hawaii, Danny Scudero, by the way, the guy that I almost gave my Heisman to over 200 yards receiving, he will 100% be somewhere else next year instead of San Jose State. But this is amazing. San Jose State is your number one passing offense in the country. They average 331 yards.
But their coach is an option coach.
That's not the full beauty of this. So San Jose State, number one in the nation in passing. Yes, Kenny Amatalolo, former Navy coach, is their current head coach. Craig Stutzman, former Hawaii wide receiver with Timmy Chang, is their OC. They are also dead last in passing yards allowed per game in 311. So they're number one in passing and number 136 in allowing passing yards. I just absolutely love that stat.
Shouldn't they just like practice against their offense?
Pretty much.
Like, I feel like that's stock up. I don't know if it like needed a lot of stock up because this is a stadium that definitely gets a lot of love, but it's just Saturday night was just a reminder of like, Rice-Eccles Stadium at night is a different animal.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, that was, and I don't know. I don't think it's fair to say Texas Tech would have lost at night. They probably would not have.
No, I'm with you on that. They dominated that game.
But, man, that game just, it's different. When it was at 10 a.m., we were like, I don't know, man. I don't know if I love this as much. So
there's something about those fireworks that they launch that just like hover over the field for the entire like length of the game. Like there's like a spooky atmosphere. It's just up there. And then my other stock up is like, you checked in on Arch lately?
Dude's balling. Texas has got a little stock arrow up for me. Everyone wanted to write them off, and I know they've got some big-time games, but they've got Georgia, they got A&M. They win one of those games. That resume is pretty juicy when you think about what they've done so far.
Especially if they wind up being the only team that stays within a score of Ohio State. Like, they can use that as a narrative, even though you and I would both roll our eyes at it.
They had a post-game win expectancy, too.
Stock down. I said, take Iowa State away from me. Just take it away. Rocco Becht, like, I can tell Rocco Becht is going to get drafted by the Niners or a Shanny disciple, and I'm going to just hate his entire career because of just what I've watched of him in college. Like, he's going to be new Brock Purdy. Did you see the hospital shot he delivered for his tight end?
Yeah.
Like, literally did not even see. Like, it was just straight up zone coverage. Fires it to his tight end. His tight end gets absolutely walloped. The type of concussion where he got up and then he just collapsed trying to get to the sideline. Like, that was just take them away. Take Kansas State away, too. I just take them off the board. I'm not allowed to bet any Kansas State games.
Yeah, that was one of those games I was staring at all week. I'm like, ooh, Kansas State, 7.5 at home.
Take it away.
I'm happy I laid off of it. There were some games that I should have laid off of, but that was one where I did, thankfully, lay off. I know Nebraska lost their quarterback, Dylan Raiola, but I just...
Well, that was going to be another stock down for me. Blackouts.
Yeah, here we go again. Nebraska. We had Big game.
Nebraska with a blackout, they lost. Tennessee had the blackout, and they lost. I think there were three blackout games, and they all lost.
You could go get blacked out, I guess.
Yeah. You got any other stock downs you want?
I mean, I guess I'll say all of the G5.
The problem in the G5 is you realize the G5 kind of has a holistic thing going on where it's like there are like four schools that have some money, and then those schools are just beating everyone, and then the rest of it is just like, I don't know. Like, they're all just cannibalizing.
And maybe Memphis just had a complete and utter turd in the punch bowl day at UAB.
Quarterback gets hurt.
Firing. Quarterback gets hurt. And maybe Memphis, look, Memphis, everything's in front of Memphis.
Yep.
They were allowed the mulligan. They are ranked in the AP. I don't know if they'll be ranked tonight. My gut would tell me no. But you've got Tulane on Friday night. You've got East Carolina, which put up a bunch of yards on Temple, by the way. Holy smokes.
Oh, I think that's the scare. I think they're going to be ready on Friday. I think the scariest game of the year is next week at ECU.
Yeah, I mean, Navy, and, you know, I'm a Notre Dame fan, so famous last words. Navy was a bit inflated because of their terrible schedule. Like,
I'm upset that they were inflated because I was really hoping to get something around 20-21 this week and then just laying it with Notre Dame, but now 26.5, ugh.
Yeah, and, you know, they go down to Denton. But, yeah, I mean, Boise State loses their quarterback. Looks like their season is toast. Their backup is a disaster. I'll say stock down. Boise State roster construction.
Uh-huh.
How do you have that as your backup? He's a walk-on.
Well, like, it's not as bad as, well, that we'll just get into it. My dumpster fire.
Syracuse?
Yep.
Oh, man, that was on my list.
Did anybody watch what happened on Friday night?
Can you tell me, tell us the stats of the walk-on quarterback who got the start for Syracuse, Joseph Filardi.
You did not tell the full story.
Walk-on lacrosse player, sorry.
Correct. Went to Syracuse as a lacrosse player. He is a freshman. And they started him over Ricky Collins. He finished 4 of 18 for 39 yards. He did not turn it over, though. He was only sacked twice.
There you go, buddy. Good job. Stock up North Carolina?
I put it up last week. They're not playing that bad, but I kind of also, who do they have this week?
Stanford. At home, and they're laying a big number.
Yeah, it's like laying 14, and it's like, do you really trust Gio Lopez to beat anyone by two scores? Like, I know they technically did it last week, but it's like, oh boy.
They're laying 7.5.
I thought it was 14. I don't know why I saw that.
I'll say dumpster fire is Syracuse was on my list. That's a good one by you. The ACC officiating all year has been an abomination, And there were two calls last week that just were next level ineptitude. The number one was the pass interference at the end of the Duke game. Like, just unreal. Fourth down, the Duke receiver literally two-hand shoves the defensive back for Clemson, and they call a pass interference on the defender. And then the other one, I'm sure you weren't watching, because why would you be watching Notre Dame Boston College?
Oh, no, I kind of tuned in early.
Because it was like Notre Dame, I mean, that was an absolute dud performance. But there was to start the second half, Boston College went on a 21-play drive. And they were facing fourth down from inside the 15-yard line.
Yeah, it was around the 10, I thought.
Grayson James drops back the pass, and he gets absolutely debacled by everybody on Notre Dame's defensive line. Like, three dudes are in his face, and they throw a flag, and they call face mask.
Yes.
And they show the replay, and Brock Osweiler, who was the analyst, was like, I don't see anywhere near a face mask. He has his shoulder. And then the moron analyst, the rules analyst, like, well, you know, I think he got his hand in the back of the helmet, and I think that's what they're calling there.
It's part of the yeah, the helmet has counts.
And then they come back from break, and they show the replay again, and like, yeah, he didn't touch the back of the helmet either. And it was Marcus Freeman was losing his mind on the sidelines, just
you know what,
terrible.
Another one, and maybe they called personal foul with targeting, and they took off the targeting.
And there were in that game, and I'll say it went both ways, there were a couple roughing the passers, and I was like, wow. There was one roughing the passer where I'm like, he didn't touch the quarterback. Like,
I know this, though. In that fourth quarter, if Caleb Downs didn't target that Penn State receiver, I don't know what targeting is. Mm-hmm. Like, he hit like seven different indicators. He launched, he led with his helmet, he hit him in the helmet above the neck. Like, it was just like, if that's not target, honestly, I was sitting there going like, do they think they play Michigan next week? Like, were they just it made no sense. Even Pereira came back and he's like, I got nothing for you guys. Like, that's targeting. What we got right? I nailed Kentucky. I didn't nail a lot last week. I nailed Kentucky and North Carolina.
It was an up and down week for me. I had New Mexico. That was my favorite bet of the week. Against UNLV. UNLV's...
They do not play defense.
They're very fraudulent. All they do is play. I mean, in Texas, I laid money line earlier in the week. That was a gruesome bad beat if you got 3.5 with Texas. That was as ugly as it gets. And then I ended up playing NC State on Saturday. I kind of figured, I was like, wow, this line is stinky poo, and it was coming down. So those were the three I got right. Got a number wrong, though. That was fun. Fun times.
Yeah,
I'll say number one I got wrong was Rice. Like, as soon as UTSA beat Tulane, I was like, ooh, I don't think Rice is going to be the right side.
I actually...
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.